Welcome to the HR Business Blueprint Podcast. I'm Nikki Masterman, founder and CEO of Inspired HR. In this series, alongside my fabulous guests, we will be chatting about becoming a consultant and building a HR business. Welcome to part two of my podcast with Janine Perryman. We had such a fantastic conversation that has so many valuable subjects that we covered that we've actually split this into two parts, and this is part two for you. As a business, I noticed the need for support around neurodiversity 4 years ago. We were starting to get a larger number of queries around behaviours within the workplace of individuals. And as I went on this journey, I mean, they do say that you can spot somebody who's neurodiverse when you're neurodiverse yourself, or you have the knowledge. When we get a phone call, you know, we'll get a phone call and we'll go, oh, this person has sudden outbursts. They're sending me 20 emails within the space of an hour because I'm not replying to them within 5 minutes. I've got 20 missed calls from them. So we can sometimes spot some of the common traits straight away, and we'll in the office look at each other and go, that person's neurodiverse, and they've either not disclosed it or the workplace isn't aware yet. So our service has grown over the years on the back of the knowledge I've gained over the last year. And Jenny, who is also a specialist in my team, she has lived experience. Her son's autistic and in special education. So she's got real lived experience with her son as well. We've built a really unique model that we're not aware anybody else does in the UK, that supports our clients, supports businesses. But the HR field have got it tough at the moment because I have gone away and learned these things, but with the Employment Right Bill that's come in, we've seen a massive increase in individuals claiming they're neurodiverse in the workplace. They do use it as an excuse sometimes, and we'll touch on that one in a moment. We are seeing a lot more people disclosing following performance management, following disciplinaries. Now, because we deal with the very complex cases, probably 85% of the cases that come into us are difficult individuals. So we do deal with the rough side of neurodiversity, unfortunately, and I'll be very honest. And we're not afraid to go. And I have had more than one conversation of going, and I am going to swear for the listeners, it's not okay to tell somebody to fuck off and then say you've done it because you're autistic.
No, it isn't.
And we have had to have this conversation with people, but the services we offer are to our clients, as soon as somebody announces they believe they're neurodiverse, now we immediately recommend screening. We work with a fantastic occupational health provider that specialise in this, that we can then refer those individuals into with the screening reports. They can use those reports for GPs, counselling, coaching, anything else they want to use into. And then we've got the knowledge then to support that workplace.
Yeah.
Now, HR professionals haven't got the time to be learning everything I've learned in reality with all of the employment changes that are coming. They've got a big piece of work to do with the workplaces. So we have now, as a business, evolved into offering those services for other HR companies and other HR consultants, because the reality is they can't do it all.
No,
and we are very good at doing it. And we've built a team like yourself and your team around us that, again, we can't be the expert in everything. So when something's a bit more complex, we've introduced yourself. But we've seen a massive increase in ICAS conciliations, tribunals, case law in relation to this. And there was a lot of case law recently, and we are constantly having to have conversations with individuals in the workplace where we go, it's not okay to behave in that way.
No, it's not.
Please don't use what you believe is a neurodiversity trait or diagnosis as a reason for that behaviour, because actually you still have to own your own behaviour and do something about it. And that's a real common thing we're seeing in the workplace. I mean, we encourage thrive in a strength-based approach.
Yeah.
But the reality is 85% of the casework we manage is a difficult individual that is using it as a reason to get away with poor performance, poor behaviour. Are you seeing that within your areas in the fields?
Honestly, I see both sides. And I think that the beauty of this conversation is that the majority of my conversations are with individuals, and the majority of your conversations are with employers. Mm-hmm. So this is a really sort of like fruitful, therefore, conversation to be having, because I'm definitely seeing situations where employers could and should do more. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we'll come across a situation where it's just like, hang on a second. And we help the person to explore their part in what's going wrong. And I think that's really, really important, is that there is there's a duality of responsibility there. You can't say to an employer, well, I'm autistic, therefore, or I'm ADHD, therefore, or I'm dyslexic, therefore, you have to do this for me. Actually, no. The needs of the business are still sort of the reason that you have a job. You're not sort of like, they don't have to keep you there if you're not going to be able to do the job. It's about what adjustments can be made so that you can do the job. And I remember a conversation with somebody who was a lifeguard who felt that the employer should employ a second lifeguard whenever they were on shift, just in case they got distracted. And I'm like, no, you're employed to be a lifeguard. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you have to be able to pay attention. Now, there was a reasonable adjustment that was possible in this particular situation because the distraction was what was in the peripheral vision. So actually, a second lifeguard station was set up so that person could move between the two. And also, there was a different place for them to sit so that they weren't being distracted by the peripheral stuff that was happening in the wider working environment. So they were able to focus on what was before them. And that's the difference between a reasonable adjustment and an unreasonable expectation, because mm-hmm. ultimately the safety of the public is what's at stake here. And the employer employed you to do a job, and you have to be able to do that job. Might you need reasonable adjustments to make it possible for you to do the job? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Nikki, when you've been liaising with my company to sort of like come out and do things, you know that you're copying in mm-hmm. a member of my team, because my team managed my diary mm-hmm. because I'm time blind so badly that I would mm-hmm. really struggle with that. So that's my reasonable adjustment, is that quite quickly into receiving any, to be fair, I'm not, my email address isn't public anyway. It goes to my team first of all. But if someone's got my email, quite quickly an email that goes back to that person that copies in my admin team so that they mm-hmm. pick up that those sorts of things, because that's my reasonable adjustment mm-hmm. that makes it possible for me to do the rest of my job. But if I had to have a second coach in with me when I'm coaching because I might get distracted or say the wrong thing or not manage my emotions or something like that, that's not a reasonable adjustment. Mm. And I think those things are sort of like part of the picture. I can remember going into a workplace and they were saying one of the reasons they'd asked for me to go in was because they had a front-facing member of staff who'd had an autism, just recently had an autism diagnosis, who now thought it was okay to be abrupt with mm-hmm. customers. Mm-hmm. And they were receiving complaints from the customers. And it was just like, why would you suddenly start being rude to customers when your role is customer-facing? Oh, well, because I'm autistic and I'm unmasked. And it's like, but the role is customer-facing. There is a requirement in that situation to put the customer at ease. That's the role that you, that's the job description, that's the job. Mm-hmm. Might it be that sometimes you could do with some decompression time after dealing with a difficult customer, but still putting on the face that customer needs for the benefit of your employer? You need some decompression time afterwards. Yeah, maybe. But you still can't be rude to the customers. Mm-hmm. And so it's that whole thing of what's reasonable and what's not reasonable. And it's not the case that employer has to keep you, is it?
It's a really relevant subject that we're talking about at this point, Janine, because this is a lot of the conversations we're having with the workplaces where what is a reasonable adjustment? And the reality is a reasonable adjustment, depending on the size of the workplace, their environment, their headcount, their funds, can differ dramatically.
Yeah, of course it can.
And we have had some cases recently where there's an expectation that a job description is changed to match that person's strengths and all of their challenges are took out. And we've kind of said, no, the job that the business needs to undergo, the job is the job. Mm-hmm. How you deliver that job, you know, when you understand yourself and you've got the resources to do it, that responsibility is on you, and the workplace can give you and put things in place to help you. So whether that's flexible hours, a quiet space to go and decompress and regulate and manage that overwhelm, it could be a different uniform because they're struggling with sensory issues around the clothing. Yeah. Very much what you talked about, where your team get emails. My team monitor my emails because I get so busy and overwhelmed with it all. And, you know, my team cringe when they look at the volume of my emails. But like yours, I don't make my email very prominent. It goes to my team. We have a support email. Now, I've put a lot of things in place for myself over the years when it comes to somebody helping me with giving me a nudge because I can procrastinate and get distracted and not want to do the stuff that's not giving me the dopamine. But workplace adjustments is the biggest one. And there was a recent court case at the moment where this particular individual was threatening behaviour, had actually threatened the staff and was quite aggressive. And his view was, my ADHD made me do it. Now, the workplace had always acknowledged that this person was ADHD, even though they weren't diagnosed. They recognised it was, and they were likely protected and put reasonable adjustments in place. But this person was using their ADHD as a reason to believe it was okay to threaten employees, make their environment very threatening and staff feeling harassed, which is never okay. This person was dismissed for it.
Yeah.
He brought a claim to his employer for discrimination on that basis because his view was, my ADHD made me do it. And the judge actually said, I absolutely acknowledge that your ADHD contributed to your behaviours, but what it didn't do is make you threaten someone.
Mm-hmm.
Those behaviours you are still in control of, and that is on you. Your workplace can't manage that behaviour for you.
No, that's the individual's responsibility. And it's like like when we work with children and families, it's just like you can't stop there. Yes, ADHD might be the reason that something is a struggle. Now, what do we do about it together? Mm-hmm. And the employer only has responsibility to that whilst you're also taking responsibility. If you're not, mm-hmm. what can the employer do? And so you're putting the employer into a lose-lose situation, and that's not tenable for anybody. And you've got to ask yourself why the person thought that was a reasonable thing to be thinking, mm-hmm. in terms of why they didn't feel that they had some responsibility to deal with that for themselves, to deal with that alongside the employer,
mm-hmm.
To see whether there was something the employer was doing that was maybe aggravating the situation. But to just put it all on the employer, that doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And I think that, and I mean, I might get shot for this, but, you know, the reality is that it does need to be said. It isn't, it's not okay, actually, for the rest of the neurodivergent community for people to be behaving in that manner.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we are in a situation now where employers are at least aware of the risks when they take on somebody who, I mean, when I went into teaching, for example, I told them I had ADHD at interview,
mm-hmm.
and their response was, thank you for telling us, but they'd just done a lesson observation, so thank you for telling us, we have to say we had already noticed, which was just funny, really, mm-hmm. when you sort of like stop and think about it. But what if they just had the experience that, mm-hmm. you were mentioning, and then therefore I thought it was okay for me to swear at my class, mm. you know, because of course that wouldn't be appropriate.
No.
I mean, I can think of one occasion where I really struggled not to giggle in an assembly,
mm-hmm.
And I was really having to hold on to that, and a couple of my students noticed, you know, and there is kind of like that whole thing in me of kind of like recognising, I actually need to be better at this. I need to regulate my emotions better, mm-hmm. than this. But that's the point. I'm recognising I need to regulate my emotions. And there are other times when, you know, we just had an agreement where I remember getting feedback once on a lesson which I was less than happy with, and having the space to be able to run that past somebody, and me just saying to them, I'm just going to say what I'm thinking. Please don't hold that against me, because once I've said what I'm thinking, I'll then be able to reason it through and to be able to calm down, and we can have a reasonable conversation. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Yes. And so I just went blah, 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 about the whole lot. And they just kind of like held space, didn't hold it against me,
mm-hmm.
allowed me to do that. And then we just sat down and we worked through what had gone on and what was okay and what wasn't okay in that situation. And because of that, the employer did actually then understand my perspective, and I was able to understand theirs. In reality, it was decided I was correct, but the, mm-hmm. reality is I was also emotionally dysregulated,
mm-hmm.
and if I hadn't have had a strategy, if I hadn't had a safe space, a safe person to go to, I might not have been able to manage that. So there's that duality of, mm-hmm. responsibility. But the school, my employer, was so good with what I refer to as the dignity principles. They just inherently had that. To be fair, it was a special school, and, mm-hmm. therefore they were kind of well equipped for it. And I had done the ADHD training in school, so they understood, mm-hmm. that as a vulnerability factor. But I'm also dyslexic, so there's like extra stresses on me in terms of the fact that when I'm planning and I'm writing, etc., that it's actually even harder and whatever else is going on. So, you know, there are a lot of extenuating circumstances, but I still have to be responsible for my behaviour, for my conduct, for being a safe teacher, for being a safe colleague. Mm-hmm. So that's duality of responsibility. And I think that is the reality, isn't it? And that's the problem that we're facing, is that individuals are not recognising the duality of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Yes, okay, ADHD or autism or dyslexia or whatever may be the reason that you're having a particular struggle. Now, what do we do about it? Mm-hmm. Ideally, together.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I mean, I've spent many years in my career when we've had welfare meetings with someone who's maybe had 10 bouts of migraine or headache, and you know, we've had to sit down with them and kind of look at their absence levels, and we've kind of gone, so what have you done about it? Have you spoken to the doctor? Are you under consultant? Is it being looked into? Oh no, I haven't been. I just take headache tablets from the shop. So we've obviously always encouraged, well, you've got to help yourself, because actually you've got this volume of absence. That then links into the neurodiversity now, where there has got to be that ownership on themselves. And where there isn't an ownership, we're seeing an increase in ACAS conciliations, grievances, claims. And this, you know, we're then having to kind of reframe and give that duality of responsibility. And they're actually making it really hard for the neurodiverse community, because where I am working really hard in my business to be able to show the strengths that a neurodiverse employee can bring to the workplace. I mean, I sometimes joke with my clients, imagine having me in the business, God forbid, but look at the strengths and the innovation that I bring. If you could harness that and the person also help themselves, that would be fabulous. But what it's actually doing, it's damaging where I'm trying to encourage my employees and my employers and my clients to see the strengths and the benefits of a neurodiverse employee, because all they see, or once they have experience of someone who's the opposite end of the scale, that's completely difficult, takes no responsibility, which unfortunately is, like I say, a lot of the cases we deal with, they're actually hindering that positivity that I'm trying to bring to the employers.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's making it really difficult for us to really kind of be able to show what people can bring.
So that's the example I gave of the school. What if they'd had that negative experience before I came along and said, by the way, I'm ADHD. Mm-hmm. You know, might they have seen it differently if they'd just been bitten? And so, no, I wouldn't, you know, it's like, you know, why should I be penalised because somebody else who hasn't taken responsibility for themselves? And as much as I don't want sort of employers to think it's okay to judge other people by other people's standards, because of course we don't, but we have also, they have to risk manage.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to discriminate against somebody based on something like that. But the reality is they're going to take a deep breath. And whether we like it or not, Nikki, we're going to see it, aren't we?
We do think,
you know, all things being equal, I'm going to go with that person because this one potentially has more risk factors to them. That's just going to be, it's going to happen whether we like it or not. And I don't want to do blaming the victim, because ultimately I don't want to blame individuals and the community, but there is that duality of responsibility, and it's really important to understand. When I've done training for the workplace, and one of the courses that I am writing is very much around the elements of dignity, which is the work of Dr. Donna Hicks, and that talks about all sorts of things and principles, and I use that when I'm coaching people to help them to understand an injustice in the workplace, to understand conflict within the workplace, particularly with autistic clients, where you've got things like but I was right, and it's just like, yeah, but you were also wrong. And that's difficult to understand because of the black and white thinking, but it's just like, you can be correct and wrong at the same time, because you can be correct in what you're saying, but wrong in terms of how you've handled it, and that you got involved in something that was not your responsibility, not your thing, and all of those things. So there is that sort of coaching element to that, which is one of the reasons that workplace coaching is so effective for neurodivergent employees, because working through those things can really, really be helpful, because obviously we're a judgment-free space and we can help people to work through it. And the amount of times when I'm working with someone, I'm like, it seems that you might be in trouble for things that aren't even your responsibility. And they're like, yeah, I am, because they got them wrong. And it's just like, ooh, and then you coach through those sorts of things. But it's like the dignity principles are really useful, because it's like there's conflict and the person feels wounded mm-hmm. by being misunderstood or misrepresented or many, many things that could be in there. But you look at the 10 elements of dignity, which I'll just sort of like read off, but mm-hmm. I would encourage people to pick up either one of the books by Donna Hicks on this, because it's great for understanding where you begin and somebody else begins, and the fact that nobody actually has the right to impinge upon somebody else's dignity, but mm-hmm. usually that's the cause of conflict. And when you can realise what your role is in conflict, it reduces by 50%, funnily mm-hmm. enough, because it takes two people to be in conflict, at least two people. So it reduces by 50% when people realise what's going on for themselves, and particularly if they can learn how to communicate that to the other party. So the acceptance of identity, whatever that happens to be, people's mm-hmm. identity is their identity. Inclusion, which includes belonging, the genuine sense of belonging, not just fitting in. Fitting in and belonging, according to Dr. Brené Brown, are not the same thing. Safety, and that's physical and psychological. And therefore, if you've got somebody who's being aggressive in the workplace and they're blaming it on their ADHD, that would be going against somebody else's dignity, which no one has the right to do. Mm-hmm. And acknowledgement of their perception. So this is where it kind of like gets interesting, because what I've just said and that kind of like, it's like the person's perception of safety and somebody else's perception of safety can sometimes mean there's sort of mm-hmm. like a bit of opposition in there and some work to do on conflict resolution. But that's okay, because if you're coming from dignity principles, you sit down at a table and you're like, yeah, but this is how I've experienced this. Yeah, but this is how I've experienced this. Ah, okay. I'll come on to the benefit of the doubt, because that's one of them coming through. Recognition, validating their contribution to in a positive way, because everyone's entitled to that. Fairness, that's about equity, that you don't treat everybody necessarily the same, because the responsibility is to meet everybody's needs, but mm-hmm. not everybody's wants. Mm-hmm. And there is one of the crucial things that we're finding in HR, isn't it? Is that it's your wants are not important, your needs definitely
are.
Benefit of the doubt. So mm-hmm. assuming everybody is coming from a place of good intent, and until you have reason to think otherwise, understanding, really listening, not just for listening's sake, but to understand. Independence. So this is very much about giving as much autonomy over things as possible. And I think from an employer's perspective, often when I'm working with somebody and you can see the employer could be doing more, it is to do with them being rigid about how things get done. Mm-hmm. Whereas usually they can be flexible about how things are done, even if things must get done. So it's like, what is the end game? And can there be some flexibility about how they get there? So that's giving mm-hmm. that person autonomy over how they do it, so they can work differently, not harder. Therefore, that's a reasonable adjustment that they yeah. can do it differently, but the outcome is still the same. And accountability, which is very much about the duality that you each have, the employer and the employee are accountable for their words, their actions, and to working together to mm-hmm. the benefit of the organisation, and that the individual also gets to thrive, and there's the duality. So I think the 10 elements of dignity are the fundamentals, and I wouldn't want to be training anybody in a coaching capacity or a workplace without talking about dignity, because mm-hmm. I think it's magic. One of the things I did want to say, though, is that in many of the working environments that I've been involved in, is functional language is something that happens. So when a neurodivergent person is under stress and strain, you might find they switch into functional language. So there'll be yes, no, and the language is shorter. It's functional, but it doesn't have the floweriness that neurotypicals love. Mm-hmm. And the person might not be able to mask that in those situations. So then the other person might perceive that as being disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And actually it's not. That would be a reasonable adjustment for everyone to understand. When that person has switched into functional language mode, there's something going on here. We need to take mm-hmm. a deep breath, not take offence. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of like the sort of things that can be useful to understand. Recovery space and time, like we mentioned, if they've got a customer facing role and they've just had a really difficult person, and they might need to kind of like take a step back afterwards because they handled it well, but they kind of know they can handle it well and then go and escape for 5 minutes mm-hmm. and just decompress whatever it happens to be that they need.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with employers in those moments, looking at the person saying, what do you need? But then maybe they've had to work together, and coaching and co-coaching with the employer and the employee with line manager can be really, really helpful, because hopefully they've kind of like built up a sort of toolkit of things that can help in those situations. So when there's a difficult situation, it's just like, deep breath, what do you need? Mm-hmm. Rather than it kind of like becoming disciplinary all of a sudden because there's a moment. Doesn't always have to be like that. It's to be solution mm-hmm. focused. What do they need in that moment? So yeah, leaning into coaching and co-coaching. so that you understand each other and you can work towards that duality and mutual accountability.
I want to touch back on reasonable adjustments. Mm. There's a real misconception when I speak to employers that reasonable adjustment is a big, costly process. It's not.
The amount of time. Attitudinal.
There's so much they can do that is free. I mean, I talk to them about two of the things I will always talk to an employer about is if you're going into a meeting, one of the greatest benefits that will help someone with a neurodivergent mind is give them the pre-agenda of what to expect in that meeting. Mm. And that goes to recruitment. Stop being afraid to give them the interview questions that enable them to thrive and think about the subject and not go mind blank in that space and get the best for people in recruitment. Or if they're going into a meeting, let them know the agenda and what that meeting's going to be covering and what it's about. One of the worst things you can do to a neurodivergent in the workplace is go, I need to see you, but I'm just going into this meeting and I'm going to be in there for the next few hours. I'll see you when I come out. Mm. By the time you come out of that meeting, that person thinks they're about to lose their job, their world is about to end, they're a complete mess and they've done nothing for the last 4 hours because they've worried so much.
Yes.
And all you were going to do was say that you'd had great feedback from a customer. Just tell them what you're planning on talking to them about so they're not overthinking.
Yeah.
They're some of the biggest kind of comments I have to and discussions I have with workplaces of just
communicate.
Yeah. Great communication, transparency. In recruitment, the benefit that brings to someone who's been recruited, let them thrive in that interview and give you the best example and scenario because they've had time to think. And that could be something you put in place for everybody that is going through that process, not just someone that you are aware is neurodiverse.
Inclusive practice.
Inclusive practice. Yeah. And I mean, I did that recently in my recruitment. They all got the questions ahead of time.
Yeah.
They knew what to expect. They knew who was coming in. We prepared them. And I encourage that all of the time. There's so much that can be done.
Yeah.
Flexible hours, regulation. I mean, I tend to be at my best late at night now. We'll work till the early hours. I was working till 2:30 last night. So my team know not to put no meetings in my diary before 10 o'clock because I need coffee and I need time to kind of wake myself up. So I don't do any client meetings before 10 o'clock because I know I work late. Some people work mornings. I tend to work much better and have my best ideas when I'm in bed or when I'm in the car driving. And We talk about the traits of ADHD, and you know, for anyone, if they're watching me on this, I have sat still this whole time. Now, for someone who claims they are ADHD, I have a habit of planting myself. I don't move very much. When people think of an individual with neurodiversity, they look at people who are hyperactive physically and that they think of that person that just doesn't sit still.
Yeah.
And that is the case for many. But actually, we know in women, sometimes it can present different. I'm a menopausal woman. It was through my menopause that my masking came down and I started to notice these traits. But for me, if you imagine that hyperactive child running around the schoolyard, I am that hyperactive brain
that
is like that.
Yeah.
My brain doesn't stop. It goes off in 1,000 directions. That's how it presents in me. So sometimes people will look at me and go, well, you're not very hyperactive, are you? And I'm like, you have no idea what's going on in my brain.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Which is why things like Kraos and QB, etc., can be really, really helpful because they assess those sorts of things. I've got a little question for you, but this might backfire.
Uh-huh.
How much are your toes and your feet moving inside your shoes?
My foot is, actually my foot.
Socially acceptable ways of actually fidgeting. Feet, fingernails, those sorts of things. But I also agree with you, rooting down is kind of like the thing. And actually, when you stop and look at each of us, my left shoulder is back and I'm slightly wedged. You're doing a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
That wedge actually helps to regulate our body movement so that we can mask. That's kind of like part of our strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an adaptive strategy. But it would become maladaptive if we were then kind of like giving ourselves pain and we were doing that all the time. But yeah, we've rooted down. We're doing that thing because it's for a short period of time, but we're going to need to get up and we're going to need to move around soon. But actually, if you it's like how much are your toes moving? And those are the sorts of things that Kraos and QB pick up on, which is why they're so useful.
Interesting. Very interesting. So when it comes to HR and neurodiversity, we know there's a great big gap in the field there. That's why people like myself and yourself working in partnership help these businesses. What can HR be doing to get themselves ready? Because it has increased. I mean, there's tribunals have increased by a third. 40% of those are autism. But we're seeing a massive increase in a knowledge needed in the workplace. What can they be doing on the back of what's going to be a very busy couple of years to get themselves ready for this?
Can I just say, though, those people were just being fired before and blamed themselves. Now they have a little bit of recourse to be able to say, hang on a second. So as much as there's been an increase in tribunals, it won't be any, well, it might be an increase in firing, but I would suggest it probably isn't. So just kind of want to clarify that a little bit first. And I think that there's a whole thing around creating a culture where people feel that they are able to talk about it and come and say, I'm actually struggling with something. And they don't necessarily have to say it's ADHD or it's autism or whatever. It could be, I think I take a really literal approach to my emails. And that means that sort of like sometimes I'm like looking at them and I can't work out what they actually mean. Can you help me? Because there's things that companies can put in place, such as AI, that might be able to help with that particular individual. Like Copilot, for example, plugs into Microsoft, and Gemini plugs into Google, whichever one you're using, without interfering with GDPR, etc. So, you know, there are ways that sort of like you could help somebody from that perspective. It's very much about thinking, what do we want to achieve, and can we be flexible about how we achieve it, rather than being rigid in terms of how you do things? Because we tend to be a bit procedural, which is fine if a particular process takes you to the end goal. And certainly for some tasks, that's appropriate. And actually for an autistic brain, that can be really, really helpful. But from an ADHD brain perspective, they're going to be like, well, hang on a minute. If I do this, that means we get there quicker. Why would you want to curb that as an employer? So it's like, okay, well, let's try it. So creating that safe space for exploration, for trying something, a bit of trial and error, communication. I remember I've been able to go to, again, thinking back to, because obviously the last time I was employed, it was when I was teaching. So again, that's the reason I'm using this as an example. I remember going to my line manager and just saying to her, I have got this, 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 and this to do. And apparently they're all equal priority. I don't know which one to do first. And I just kind of put everything out in front of her. And she went, well, do them in this sequence. And I didn't realise that you'd been given that to do, so I'll take that off your plate. And that was kind of like just the way that conversation went. And I've got, excellent, I've got them in sequence. I can go away and I can do that. And I'm not overwhelmed. I'm not going, ah. And also, my boss knows I'm on it. And also, if anybody says anything to her, she's like, yeah, I know, I've put them in sequence for her. So I protect my line manager by having that conversation, but I can't do that if she's not had that conversation back with me and we haven't got that relationship. So I think it's a lot to do with relationships. It's a lot about creating those psychologically safe spaces where people can say, this is difficult. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be about neurodiversity. Like the example you gave, if you don't say to somebody, I'll be back with you in a couple of hours because I've got something to discuss with you, and then just disappear. That creates so much anxiety, not just for your neurodivergent people, but anybody with mental health challenges, anybody with trauma in their background that you might not know about. Don't do that sort of stuff. It's just like, it's communication, it's safe spaces. It's like somebody being able to say to you in that moment, have I done something wrong? Before you wander off, you know, it's like, can they talk to you? Communication is massive. Training is massive, because good training will facilitate a culture of openness and tolerance and understanding and acceptance, and therefore thriving.
And a lot of what you talk about is basically create a safe space for people to thrive. And it all starts with a conversation.
It does. It's a lot to do with conversation.
Janine, it's been my absolute pleasure talking to you today. Thank you so much. I know we've got a few days planned and we're delivering training for a client, which I'm really looking forward to.
Me too.
But it's been my absolute pleasure learning from you, talking to you and working with you. What's next for yourself? What's your plans?
Well, we're writing lots of courses at the moment. We've just become CPD registered, and the first course that's going through that is on anxiety in young people. The next one is on ADHD and complex profiles, working one-to-one with those people, but there's more planned and lots of CPD that's work-related as well, because obviously we want to be training professionals to be better professionals, and therefore that's why we've gone down the CPD route, because it gives a great structure to everything, and then we'll look at further accreditation further down the line. But a lot of course writing and delivery, a lot more coaching, but training more coaches, and bringing more people through, because the more we can, it isn't just about doing it, it's about doing it well. So I feel like the best use of my time and my energy and my knowledge is to equip people to do it, so that I don't have to do all of it. I can make more of a difference if I'm training more people.
And that's an area we're going to be focusing on in the coming years. We've already discussed that there's a real gap in the market out there for knowledge within HR professionals. We've also identified through other experiences and partnerships that both of us have had or are within, where there's a real gap in the field in the legal sector as well.
Yeah, there is, massive.
Where there can be support and employment tribunals, but also individuals who are neurodiverse that are going through the court system for one reason or another. So I know yourself and I, we're going to be working on looking at that CPD training and raising awareness and knowledge and getting some really great coaches and screeners and specialists out there trained between us.
Yes.
And we know we've got some pipeline books and there's a lot we're going to be doing to support all of those professionals out there that we know are struggling to get their head around this at the moment. So, you know, watch this space. But in the meantime, individuals that are needing support can reach out to us at Inspired Minds and Inspired HR, where myself and Janine will support organisations, HR professionals, HR consultants to rattle through what needs to be done and support them with the delivery and support that they need to be putting in place. So, if you're listening today, don't forget to subscribe, like, share, and hopefully you've took something away from today. And if you still have more questions, then make sure you reach out to us. Thanks for listening to the HR Business Blueprint Podcast. For any information on what we've covered in this episode, head over to the show notes. And make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Thanks for listening.